Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
If you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway, that's the best. Get your kicks on Route 66.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. And you're listening to what's probably the best-known recording of the song Route 66, also known as the Mother Road or the Main Street of America. It is probably the most famous highway in America. This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides, a show where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. And this year marks the centennial of Route 66, the iconic American highway stretching from Chicago to L.A. and celebrated in story, song, and television. It's been over 30 years since the highway was decommissioned. However, it still draws international and domestic travelers looking to get their kicks on Route 66. One of those travelers who has been documenting the Main Street of America is Ohio photographer David J. Schwartz. For more than 20 years and over 40 trips, he's captured the sights along the highway with his camera. He joins us now. Welcome to All Sides, David.
Hi, thanks for welcoming me, Amy.
So as I just mentioned in the introduction, Route 66 was decommissioned in 1985. What draws you back to this road and so many others? I mean, it's not just you. What keeps drawing people back and back to this road?
Well, you know, what first started off as the sights along the highway, you know, history and that sort of thing, quickly led into the people that you meet along the road. Mm-hmm. There's so many characters out there, so many welcoming souls. And as you travel the highway, you get to know these people and you start making friends and you begin to become drawn back to visit the folks that you maybe met on your last trip.
So the people who have become your friends, have they been there for years, like all of your 40 trips? Do you see the same people?
Some of them have been and some of them are new faces. The interesting thing about Route 66 is it's very much a living piece of history. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not contained behind a velvet rope or tucked away in glass. It's something that you can actually step into and become part of if you wish. So what's pretty neat is over, especially the last several years, I'm seeing a lot of people that are kind of dreaming up new ideas along Route 66 and opening new unique businesses that pay homage to the road and play along with the idea.
Mm. Well, I love that idea of new businesses opening up. So your photographs have been selected for the United States Postal Service Route 66 Centennial Stamp Series. Congratulations, first of all.
Thank you.
Yeah. How did that come about? How did you end up with the post office and a stamp?
Well, I kind of feel like I possibly may have manifested this many years ago. One day, looking at my thumbnails on my computer in Lightroom, and being like, you know, these would present really well as stamps, I was thinking to myself, and kind of went about researching, how do I reach out to the Postal Service and make this sort of thing happen? But I couldn't find a pathway to get there and kind of just tucked that idea away. And it's been about 3 years ago now. One morning, the phone rings and the lady on the other end says, I represent the United States Postal Service, and we are looking to create a set of stamps to honor each state of Route 66 for the centennial. We found your work and we absolutely love it and feel that it would play well for our stamps. Is that something you'd be interested in doing? And I picked myself up off the floor after hearing that and said, yes, I would love to work with you.
Wow, that truly does seem like you manifested it. You were like, I have this idea, and then you just spoke it into happening. That's really cool. Of all the photographs you've taken over so many trips, like, how were the photos picked to be on these specific stamps?
They came to me with a set of images that they had kind of screenshotted off of my site and said, you know, we're feeling these. We'd love to see what else you have. And I went through I don't recall exactly how many, but I gave them a pretty good selection of images that I thought represented Route 66 well, keeping with the idea that, you know, we want to represent Route 66 and we also want to, you know, have some different variation of what you see along the route and then also represent each state. So in a way, as you know, as you start to lay these images out, they become sort of a sliding puzzle because you want to make sure that, you know, you're representing each state, but then you're also, you know, representing some different ideas from landscapes to signage to buildings and things like that.
Was it 8 photos that ended up being selected? Is that right?
Actually, a total of 9. So there's 8 stamps, and then the 9th one is what's called the salvage, and that's the image that goes around the outside of the stamps.
Oh, when you buy the sheet of stamps to make it look pretty.
Exactly. Is that...
All right. Yeah. So you have hundreds upon hundreds of photos. How do you get it? Thousands upon thousands of photos. Yeah, let's say that. Thousands. How do you get it down to 8? Is it like picking your favorite child?
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, obviously there's a process in getting things vetted. And then also, you know, working with the art director there and what, you know, they feel works nicely for them. So when I kind of dove into it, I thought, okay, you know, the way the image is going to be represented is very small. So it needs to be graphic and bold. Mm-hmm. And you know, it needs to pop off of that letter that it's going to be attached to one day. So I selected images that I felt told the story of Route 66 and also would, you know, do exactly that, be graphic, bold, and very noticeable, you know, on the envelope.
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the centennial of Route 66 with David J. Schwartz, whose photographs have been selected for the United States Postal Service Route 66 Centennial Stamp Series. So besides the stamps, which obviously is a huge thing for you, are you celebrating the centennial of Route 66 in any other ways?
So I recently opened an exhibition in Springfield, Illinois, that is part of a series called Route 66, The Road That Takes You. And this is a series that's commissioned, or actually a series that is certified by the Route 66 Centennial Commission. Mm-hmm. And I worked with Visit Springfield, Illinois, that is. There's 2 Springfields on Route 66. And we custom curated a selection of images that represent the people of Route 66 in Springfield, Illinois, as well as the locations of Route 66 in Springfield, Illinois. And we have a dozen various images hanging at the pharmacy gallery there. And currently I'm working to pull some other exhibitions together as well to continue that series, you know, throughout the U.S. on 66 and, you know, even further out from there.
Whether it's neon signs or the desert landscapes or those landmarks everyone knows, is there, what do you enjoy for like photographing the most? Do you have a favorite, like you take pictures of it every time you pass it?
You know, I have a lot of locations like that, actually. Mm-hmm. There's just some places that just really call to me, and I like to explore it in different light, different times of day, different seasons, that sort of thing. There's a place called the Gay Parita Sinclair Gas Station, which is, it's just west of Springfield, Missouri, mm-hmm. and it's in a town called Paris Springs. And a friend of mine rebuilt this gas station that existed up until about the 50s when it had burned down. And it was on his property. And in his retirement, he wanted to greet visitors as they traveled Route 66. And he really created something special there. Mm-hmm. It's a true homage to the old American gas station. And the scenes there are just incredible. Unfortunately, Gary, he passed away in 2015, but his daughter and her partner, George, so Barb and George, took over the station and have carried on his tradition. So it's a really wonderful place, and I just love being there. It's out in the country. Being that they're friends of mine, I'm able to stay there, wake up in the morning at the first light of dawn, hear the birds chirping, and just make photographs. And it's just one of my most favorite places to be and create photographs on the road.
You also, you mentioned earlier that you're seeing more businesses kind of popping up and reopening on Route 66. Is that because there's more of an interest? I hear that travelers are coming, even like international travelers want to come and drive the road. Besides what you just mentioned, like what's another business that has opened up?
Well, an excellent example is Buck Adams Cosmic Curios, and that's in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And Mary Beth Babcock is the driving force behind that. She's really an incredible human. She was Tulsa Person of the Year, I think, last year or 2 years ago. And not only has she purchased this old gas station and she turned it into a gift shop, put up Buck Adams, which is a modified muffler man that wears a space helmet and actually pays homage to her father. And then came up with Stella Adam, which pays homage to her mother, and put that one on the other side, which is a space cowgirl. And so that really started pulling people into the east side of Tulsa to stop and check out that business shop there. And she just really inspired that whole side of Tulsa to really start stepping up and celebrating Route 66. And she's actually been involved in a place called Meadow Gold Mac, which has its own giant muffler man. And it's kind of a like a artist's sort of, what do I want to call it? Basically like a artist mall where they have, you know, different arts and some antique sort of stuff available. And then she's also resurrected a Rosie the Riveter there. And then she has Buck's Vintage, which has another giant, which is holding a guitar. And she's just created this whole vibe on the east side of Tulsa. And it's led to so many other businesses opening up in that area. And Tulsa from 10 years ago to today on the east side is just totally different than it was.
And that sounds like a photographer's dream come true, or like at least someone with a selfie stick, right, would have a lot of fun there.
Yes, for sure.
Well, since everyone has a camera on their phone these days, do you have any tips for amateur photographers who are traveling Route 66? What kind of like photography tips would you give people?
Well, you know, what I would say, first of all, is light is everything. If you're photographing in the middle of the day, the light's coming from overhead, the contrast isn't very good, things tend to be more washed out. So if you shoot in the morning, golden hour after the sun's come up, till maybe about 10 a.m. or in the evening, 5 p.m. on, and I'm kind of talking about summer hours now.
Yeah.
You're going to get much better looking photographs because the quality of light is better then. So that would be one of my biggest tips. Another one would be, you know, take time to explore the subject matter that you're interested in. While the first thing that you see might be really cool, if you take time to explore it more, you may find that you come up with an even better shot.
And golden hour is a real thing, right? You got to pay attention to the light. Yeah. Based on all your travels along Route 66, do you have any tips for someone who maybe this summer is planning a trip? I don't know, maybe to start with, how many days do you recommend? Are you a take it slow kind of guy?
Most definitely. Yeah. Being a photographer, you really need to take it slow. And it becomes hard for me to exactly suggest how long it takes to travel because I do take it quite slow. Not always, but a lot of times. And then when I am taking it fast, I have a lot of photo assignments for a magazine that I shoot for. So, you know, I may be jumping around between different locations and things. So, you know, my traveling Route 66 is a lot different from, you know, the casual traveler. I would suggest at minimum, though, from what I know from my earlier days, that if you really want to start in Chicago and end in LA and take all of 66, at the extreme bare minimum, if you really want to enjoy it, you got to give it at least 3 weeks. But I would suggest more like a month to a month and a half.
Oh, wow.
If you really want to dive into it, if you have the time to.
All right. So 3 weeks at bare minimum. I got it.
If you don't have that time,
yeah.
What's really great is, you know, pick a section and just enjoy that little area. And actually, it's much more enjoyable not to try to go all the way across the country, you know, get your feet wet, explore a couple of cities, or maybe, do one state. And I think you'll actually find it more enjoyable that way. And then
Yeah.
come back from there.
That's probably good tips there. Before we end, I just wanted to highlight a couple of the stamps that are featured. Grant's Cafe is one of them. Where is Grant's Cafe?
Grant's Cafe is in Grants, New Mexico, believe it or not.
Okay.
And well, at least it was. That sign has been missing from that location now for, I'm going to say, about 3 or 4 years. It was recently restored, and it now hangs in Albuquerque at a place called Glorieta Station, which is it's like an event center, and they have a lot of old vintage signage, some that have come from Route 66, some from other locations. I haven't physically been there yet to check it out, but it looks pretty interesting from the photos that I've seen. So it doesn't exist there anymore. Grants, New Mexico is actually famous for the first uranium mine in the US, which is called Haystack. So that whole area was big time boom area for uranium mining back, in the mid 20th century.
And then one more. Where is you have a photo highlighted of Munger Moss Motel. Where is that?
Yes, that seems to be the biggest favorite from what I'm seeing so far of all of the stamps. That's in Lebanon, Missouri, which is about 45 minutes east of Springfield, Missouri. And the owner that recently passed, maybe about 2 or 3 years ago now, there, Ramona and her husband Bob, they had been there since 1971 welcoming guests. And the day that I took that photo, it was actually the 70th anniversary party of the motel.
Well, I encourage our listeners to check out the stamp so you can see all 9 images that are on there. Our guest has been David J. Schwartz, Route 66 fine art and editorial photographer. His photographs have been selected for the United States Postal Service Route 66 Centennial Stamp Series. David, thank you so much for joining us on All Sides.
Thank you, Amy.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and this is Fascinating Ohio. Thanks for joining us.
You know, every day on Up First, NPR's Golden Globe-nominated morning news podcast, we bring you 3 essential stories. At the heart of each story are questions. What really happened? What really mattered? What happens next? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious and to follow the facts. Follow Up First wherever you get your podcasts and start your day knowing what matters and why.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. This is Fascinating Ohio, a show where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. This local author fuses history lessons with ghost stories to create a fun and interesting way to learn Ohio history. Having written 2 books already in the Ohio Kids series and coming out soon with a 3rd, Logan Lyon is continuing his family tradition of finding new and unique ways of teaching. Welcome to All Sides, Logan.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So when did you first discover or think, like, I like writing. I want to write a book.
Well, this book, the first book, The Chillicothe Ghost, that started when I was in 8th grade. When I was in 8th grade, every kid in Ross County had to write a ghostwriting contest. Everybody had to do it. No choice. So
I'm thinking you didn't want to at the time.
No, I did not.
Yeah.
Well, 8th grader would.
Yeah. So you wrote, so the heart of this story, did you write in 8th grade?
Mm-hmm.
And you saved it?
I did. I got to tell you this story really quick.
Yeah.
I was sick that day. They announced the winners. So I got into school late. I walked into the classroom. They're like, hey, you won the county ghostwriting contest.
Ooh.
My mouth dropped. I'm like, what? Like, yeah, you won it. I'm like, are you sure? Like, yeah, you honestly did.
Wow. So that winning in the 8th grade, did you tuck that away and save it for the future?
I did. I put it in my computer back then.
Yeah.
Fast forward to about 20 years later, I'm cleaning out my old computer. I found the story, and I'm like, you know what? Maybe I should try making this into a book. One thing led to another, and that's all we got.
And now you have a book. Okay, so the characters in it, are based off of you and your friends. Did you make that choice because of relatability to readers, or just because, you know, right? It's good to write about what you know.
A little both. Yeah. A little both. I based it on what me and my friends would do if we saw these people.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I knew a little bit about it, so I figured,
yeah,
hey, maybe kids could relate to this.
So, what inspired you though to decide to do a children's book specifically?
One, I was a I come from a family of teachers. Mm-hmm. I was a teacher for a little bit. My mom was a history teacher for years. Mm. She's actually my biggest inspiration for this book. My grandmother was a teacher. We just like finding new and interesting ways to teach history to kids.
Yeah. Yeah. So your way you've decided to teach history to kids is through having some teenagers meet some ghosts, right? Mm-hmm. Are ghosts a good medium? I guess, do kids like ghosts?
Yeah, they like ghosts. Like mm-hmm. every Halloween, you see ghost stuff all over television. So, mm-hmm. yeah, they love ghosts.
Yeah. So your first book focuses on several ghosts who are related to Ohio history, specifically related to they have a tie to Chillicothe, right? Which is where you're from. How did you decide which historical figures to choose?
Well, Thomas Worthington, he had a big, big presence, not only in Chillicothe history, mm-hmm. but also in Ohio history, too. I didn't know if you know this, but he was also our sixth governor and our first senator of Ohio. So I figured
I learned that in your book. Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that either until I visited his home, the Adena Mansion, one day, and I learned that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, this is really cool. So I figured that would be a good place to start.
Yeah. So the kids in your book get to meet Thomas Worthington and his wife. And basically, they learn the history. They learn about him, you know, but he's a ghost, right?
Well, it could go either way. Is he a ghost? Isn't he? Was it just some reenactor, or was it the real thing?
That's true. I know. Logan leaves a little mystery in the story for the kids. What ages are you hoping? Like, do you have an age in mind of who should be reading this book?
Yeah, like upper elementary, lower middle school, like third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade, in that era.
Mm-hmm.
It's enough to get their attention, but short enough where they don't lose interest.
They can finish the book, yeah. And has enough information that they'll learn something.
It has enough. They'll learn a little bit about Chillicothe. Not only Thomas Worthington, but Chillicothe as well.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it mentions Tecumseh.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know who Tecumseh is, he was a famous Shawnee Native American who mm-hmm. was believed to be born in the area. I think it goes a little bit into the Majestic, mm-hmm. which some believe is the oldest theater in America. Mm-hmm. Talks about the history of that, too.
Yeah, you have a lot of Chillicothe history mm-hmm. in there. This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking with local author Logan Lyon. So tell me about how you came up with this idea that you were going to make it a series, because I'm thinking you started with one book, or did you start with the idea where you knew you wanted more than one book?
Well, actually, I just started out with one book,
mm-hmm.
and the publisher I talked to, he's like, can you write another story? This one's really good. I'm like, you want another story?
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, I guess I can come up with one really quick. I think, okay, who do I want to write about first?
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know what? I've been a big Elvis Presley fan since I was in high school. Not high school, middle school.
Yeah.
I've read 1,000 books about Elvis Presley, so I figured let's start with him. Mm-hmm. So that's how.
So the second book is The Ohio Kids Meet Elvis Presley.
That's correct.
All right. And you picked Elvis Presley purely because you like him.
All that. And he has a big importance on pop culture, whether you like him or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's rare for an artist to affect several generations, all the way from Bob Dylan to U2 to Taylor Swift.
Mm.
So that's...
Yeah. Okay. So I only got to read the first book. And in the first book, The Ohio Kids Meet the Chillicothe Ghosts. And it involves a cemetery. It involves deciding whether they're reenactors on Halloween or if they're actually ghosts. You know, that is all in there. Where are the Ohio kids meeting Elvis?
Where else? His home, Graceland.
Oh, okay. So the Ohio kids travel to Graceland?
They travel to Graceland. I don't want to give away too many details in the book.
That's okay,
but
yeah.
Somehow they end up in the Graceland. Mm-hmm. They're following their girls because teenage guys.
That's what teenage guys do?
Yeah,
okay.
Of course. And they see this character who looks like Elvis Presley, and they get a little jealous because this guy's good looking. He looks just like Elvis. They're like, hey, wait a minute.
We're supposed to be with these girls.
Yeah, yeah. Not this dude.
Yeah. All right. So so I'm also told that there's a third one coming?
There is a third one coming out.
All right. Who's the ghost in that?
Well, I don't want to give away too many details, but
oh, I'm going to make you a little bit here.
All right, I won't give away.
I don't think third graders through sixth graders are listening right now. They should be in school, so it's okay.
Yeah, they should be.
Yeah.
But while giving away too many details, it's going to be about the actor Jimmy Stewart.
Okay, what made you pick him?
Because I love his story. Mm. I mean, I love Elvis Presley's story too, but I really love his story. If you all know who Jimmy Stewart was, he was a famous actor during World War II when everybody had to be drafted to go in the war. He didn't wait to be drafted. He was one of the first actors to go sign up. Mm. They told him, no, you're too skinny, so he had to build muscle and wait till he finally made the cut. A lot of people don't know this, but he is the highest-ranking military actor in military history.
I did not know that.
After the war, he continued to serve in the Air Force Reserves, made all the way to Brigadier General, highest actor in military history.
Okay, so the Ohio kids are going to meet him?
They're going to meet him.
Where do they have to travel to meet him?
They have to travel to his hometown of Indiana, Pennsylvania.
Oh, Indiana, Pennsylvania. Okay, I had forgotten he was from there. I grew up in Pittsburgh, but my grandmother is from Indiana, Pennsylvania. I completely forgot Jimmy Stewart was from there. See, you're teaching history left and right. So tell me about the idea of publishing a book. I mean, that is not an easy thing to do.
Definitely not.
So tell me, how did you end up publishing? How did you find a publisher? How did you go from A to B?
Well, Google.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
The honest answer, Google. Yeah. I send them to publisher after publisher after publisher, send them story, and I've gotten, we like the story, we just don't feel like it's for us, or mm-hmm. no, we don't want to do it. So I finally found a publisher, a new one, relatively new, Huntsville, Alabama. Josh Adams, he just started up. He's a wonderful guy. He's like, I like this story. Let's publish it.
Wow.
So that's how we got it.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So you weren't afraid of hearing a few no's?
Not.
How many no's did you hear before the yes?
About 50.
Yeah. I can believe it. I thought you were going to say 100. Yeah. Publishing is hard.
Yes, it is.
So so you have this third one coming out. So we have the Ohio kids meeting the Chillicothe ghosts, meeting Elvis, and then meeting Jimmy Stewart. Are there more to come?
There will be more to come. It will not only be about Ohio history, because there's plenty of Ohio history.
Yeah.
But it's going to be about U.S. history as well.
Okay. How many do you have in your back pocket here?
Right now, 3.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you there'll be more in the future.
Okay. So this 3 have been published and you have 3 more in the
there'll
works?
There'll be 2 published, the third one that will be.
Yes.
But I got more in the future.
Okay. And has your publisher talked to you about continuing the series?
We have talked about continuing the series, yes.
Okay. Okay. I wanted to talk more about how your mother inspired you, because you mentioned that briefly a few moments ago. So your mother is actually included as a character in the first book, right?
That's right.
How did she inspire you to become a writer?
Well, like I said, she was a history teacher. Mm-hmm. She's no longer with us, I'm afraid. She passed away a few years ago.
I'm sorry.
But she believed in me when not many people didn't. I had learning disabilities in school. A lot of people thought I wouldn't make it anything of myself. Mm. She was one of the few that encouraged me, yes, you can. You can. And she also drug me to every battlefield, every history museum she could growing up. Mm. She wanted to make sure I learned this. She was a wonderful woman. She had a heart for kids. She went out of her way to teach kids about history, English, whatever you can think of. Mm. She was my biggest inspiration.
What do you think she would think about you not just being a writer, but writing about history?
Well, she would have loved it.
Yeah.
She would have been shocked that I was a writer. But I believe she would have loved it and would have been proud.
And tell me about needing different ways to teach kids history. Because you mentioned that, I don't know if it was in another interview you did, or maybe it's on the back of the book, where you said that this is a different way to expose kids to history. Why do they need a different way?
Because kids learn different ways. Mm-hmm. Not every kid learns from reading the book. Some people learn visually. Like, I believe out in the lobby, you had clips about TV shows. Mm-hmm. Some kids learn that way by watching television. Mm-hmm. Like, I've known kids that they may not like reading the book, but if you show them the PBS documentary Baseball, they love that. And I've met kids who hate documentaries but love books. So I believe every kid learns differently.
Yeah. So tell me a little. You mentioned that you had a learning disability growing up. What was that like of trying to, you know, you had a mom who's a teacher, but maybe you didn't like school that much?
I loved learning, but I hated school.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that is I loved learning about different things. I just didn't like being in a classroom for 8-9 hours at a time.
Yeah.
I have cerebral palsy, a very mild form of cerebral palsy. Hmm. So it takes me a long time to convert short-term memory into long-term memory. So that was murder growing up. Teachers love that.
Okay. Well, what would your little kid self think about you now? You know, you're a published author. You're trying to teach kids history a different way. What would you say to yourself back then, now?
It's going to get better. Mm. It's going to take hard work, but you're going to make it, bud. Mm. I guarantee it.
And would that kid who didn't really like sitting in school 8 hours a day believe that he was publishing history books?
Not at all. He probably would have laughed at you or looked at you like you were crazy.
Mm. Where did you get, I'm looking at the cover and there's, you know, an illustration on the cover. Where did you get the artwork for the covers?
That was the publisher.
Oh, really?
I just told him what I wanted, my ideas, and he took care of the rest.
Okay. Okay. Are you happy with how they've turned out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am.
Okay, so tell me what's next. When does the third book come out?
Oh, the third book is planned to come out in March.
Okay,
I don't have a date in particular, but the plan is about mid-March, late March.
Okay, and where can people, if someone's listening right now and they want to get one of your books, The Ohio Kids, for their own kid, where can they find them?
You can find them on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart website, my publisher's website, HuntsvilleIndependentPress.com. I believe Wheatberry in Chillicothe, it's an independent bookstore. They still have a few copies left.
All right. Well, I love the idea of this supporting the independent bookstore. So what's the name of that store?
Wheatberry Books, Chillicothe.
All right. Well, we have been talking with local author Logan Lyon about his new book series called The Ohio Kids. Thank you so much for joining us today, Logan.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jarovich. This is Fascinating Ohio, a show from All Sides and WOSU, where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. Prom season typically runs in the spring, and this time of year can be fun for high school students to get together with their friends, dress up, and make memories they will be able to look back on. But some of the costs associated with prom season and other end-of-school-year activities can be tough for students and their families. But costs should never prevent students from sharing experiences with their peers and having a good time. Fairy Good Mothers is a Worthington boutique that allows high school students to pick out a prom dress for free. The boutique relies on volunteers and donations to give high schoolers either new or lightly worn dresses to wear on prom night. And joining us now to tell us about the business, the mission, and prom season is Katie Persico, president of Fairy Good Mothers. Welcome to All Sides, Katie.
Thank you for having me, Amy.
So I love the name, Fairy Good Mothers, and your tagline is a gift for now, magic forever. So tell me, do you know the history of how the name started? And tell me a little bit about that mission statement.
Oh, absolutely. So in 2005, a group of five friends went on a girls' trip to Chicago. And while they were there, they were walking around sightseeing, they saw a building with a line wrapped around the corner, and they're trying to figure out, like, what's going on here? So they stopped and asked, and they were told that it was the Glass Slipper Project, which was a nonprofit and a prom pop-up shop benefiting high school students in the Chicago area. So they make an appointment, they come in, they get fitted for the dresses, and they can accessories, shoes, and they were able to take all that home for free of charge. They, you know, went on their way, had a good rest of their trip, and they kind of were brainstorming and thought to themselves, we could do that here in Columbus. So within the span of, let's say, a year, they rallied their friends, either volunteered or voluntold them, and organized, started their, like, their nonprofit, got organized, and within the span of a year, they held their first Cinderella's Closet Boutique pop-up shop.
So they took that glass slipper name and they thought, okay, well, that's Cinderella. And then how did the name turn into Fairy Good Mothers from there?
Yeah, so it was the idea of one of their friends, they're kind of like scrapping around different ideas of like what to call themselves, because you don't want to necessarily call yourself like the Glass Slipper Project.
You
want
a copy, yeah.
You want to be unique. So it was just a kind of happenstance. They landed on Fairy Good Mothers and it stuck.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've been Fairy Good Mothers ever since.
Your founders called themselves fairies. Are these five founders still involved?
One has since passed, many of them are, you know, well of retirement age. So they long since passed the baton on, but many of them do, you know, show support, still, you know, wishing us well and like chiming in and sharing our, you know, social media posts. So, you know, we still do have involvement from the founding fairies.
Okay. So the founding fairies. I love that. Okay. So then, the Fairy Good Mothers, I called you a boutique in Worthington. Mm-hmm. So you basically, since 2006-ish, right, mm-hmm. have been helping students get prom dresses.
Correct.
I mean, tell me more about your mission, your goal, what you do. Yeah.
So we're an all-volunteer organization based out of Columbus. In years past, the model has been like a pop-up shop. Mm-hmm. So we'd pop up in like, you know, various areas, like where we can get, you know, building space.
Yeah.
It takes some space to, you know, hold all the dresses, make sure we have enough space for students to comfortably shop. And, you know,
try them on,
especially. Yeah. So, you know, since 2023, we've been at the shops at Worthington Place, which is great because, you know, when we aren't doing the pop-up shop, we can kind of store our stuff and, you know, gear up for the next year. But what we do is, you know, we make sure that we have enough dresses in sizes 000 all the way through 42. We source jewelry and accessory donations. So every student is able to choose like a jewelry piece and like either a shawl, a wrap, or a clutch purse to kind of round out their outfit. We also work hard at sourcing goodie bag donations. So we want to make sure that, you know, it's not just the dress.
Yeah.
Students are able to come in, they make an appointment, and they're paired with one of us as a, you know, like a personal shopper. So it's a one-on-one experience for every student that comes in. They're able to kind of, you know, from head to toe, get, you know, a pretty lovely outfit to, you know, fit and flatter them for their prom.
So the whole organization is called Fairy Good Mothers, mm-hmm. but then your actual event you do whenever you're putting the prom dresses in the girls' hands is called Cinderella's Closet Boutique. Is
correct.
That okay? So I know that you recently closed Cinderella's Closet Boutique because, you know, we're past prom season, but you'll open again in 2027.
Yes.
Tell me about this past season.
How
did you serve? How many did you serve?
Oh, this past season was great. Mm-hmm. We were able to serve, and we just kind of figured out final numbers yesterday, 1,302 students.
Wow.
Which is amazing. You know, it's one of the higher totals we've had over the years. We typically hit around or over 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing over 1,300 students come in was great. We were open this year for three weekends. What we try to do, because prom season is varied, so it's not just like the May and June that we were used to years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Prom sometimes starts for schools in March.
Oh,
so,
no.
Yeah.
Why they do that? Okay.
You know, it might be, you know.
Calendars are hard. Yes.
Calendars
okay.
are hard.
Yeah.
We take a look at the schedules as soon as we get them and try to plan like for like a wide range, which is why we hold the dates like February, March, and April, just mm-hmm. to make sure like all students, we're trying to provide as much coverage as possible.
Yeah. So how do this, you say they have to make an appointment because mm-hmm. you have to know that they're coming. Who qualifies? Is it just kids from Central Ohio? Tell me about your clientele.
Our clientele is varied. The majority of students that we do see are from the Central Ohio area. The only qualifier is that they're a high school student. So whether they are homeschooled, they go to a traditional public or private school, we're happy to serve. We don't have anybody prove need.
Mm.
That can be a barrier to participation for some. And, you know, we don't want to turn anybody away based, you know, with need-based requirements. But, you know, through the boutique over the years, we see students from you know, Central Ohio and beyond. We've seen students from Michigan, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, and Indiana, and all over the state. So there are some, you know, that are willing and happy to travel to us to go through the boutique.
So the students register in advance so mm-hmm. that you know that they're coming, and then they're allowed to come in, look at the dresses, try them on, and they have like a shopper helper assigned to them. Is that right?
Yes. So, you know, appointments are preferred because it helps us like plan like the amount of volunteers that we need to have on hand. But we do take walk-ins. But every student is paired with a personal shopper who's a volunteer that, you know, works with them to figure out their fit, what style they're looking for. Mm-hmm. If there's, you know, their school has any dress code requirements, we try to, you know, work within that. But the personal shopper escorts them through the whole boutique experience and is their one-on-one helper for the day.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds a lot like the TV show Say Yes to the Dress. Like, does it have that vibe?
Oh, totally. Mm-hmm. It's hard to describe the vibe, but I always say it's very energetic and very electric. And you can tell when, you know, students are, you know, they found the dress or they found like that one or two that they love, because you'll see, you know, people hyping them up in the waiting room. The waiting room is also a great place to be because parents, guardians, loved ones usually, you know, are in there for, you know, waiting on their student, and they'll start cheering and, you know, encouraging the students as they come out in their dresses. It's very positive. And yeah, I would say it is close to that Say Yes to the Dress, but like with more cheering.
Oh, good. Yeah. That's a TV mm-hmm. show. It could be a little drama.
Yes.
Okay. So does that mean, so if you gave away 1,302 dresses, you need more than that for they try on more than one, and it's not like you have the exact number of dresses.
Yes.
So like how many dresses would you say this season you had total, and then 1,300 walked out the door?
So this year we had over 3,000 dresses.
Okay.
And it's no small feat. We source dresses from all over. The majority of our donations these days are from the community. Mm-hmm. We collect anybody's, you know, welcome to donate dresses to us. We collect typically once a month through like a donation day. We'll open up our doors in Worthington and welcome people in to drop stuff off. But, you know, when you have over 1,300 students come in, you want to make sure you have a well-stocked selection, mm-hmm. Which is why, you know, we take great pains to make sure we have dresses in a vast, you know, array of sizes and styles, because you never know what a student might want. We've got a lot of students that will come in and choose, like, maybe that first dress they try on. Mm-hmm. I love those students because, like, they're so decisive. They know exactly what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got students that will come and they'll try on, like, you know, 5-10 dresses, sometimes more, mm-hmm. You know, just trying to, like, narrow down, like, what they might like. But, yeah, we want to make sure that there's enough supply for the demand.
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about prom season and making sure everyone has a dress with Katie Persico, president of the Fairy Good Mothers. So I wanted to know how you got involved. So right now you're in charge. I just mm-hmm. called you the president of Fairy Good Mothers. How did you get started with it? And tell me a little bit about your journey with the program.
Yeah, I got involved around 2014. I had a friend in my book club, like, mention it, you know, offhandedly, like, I'm going to volunteer at the Cinderella's Closet Boutique. And I asked, I was like, what's that? She, you know, gave me like details. She's like, oh, it's like a prom pop-up shop and like students can come and sign up. And one of my other friends, she's like, yeah, I volunteered with it before, but, you know, high schoolers are scary.
Oh, no.
I was like, okay, you know, and I was like, okay, and obviously that didn't dissuade me, so mm-hmm. I signed up for like the next available weekend as a runner, which is a role where, you know, we take all the dresses that, you know, students don't want, zip them up and get them back on the racks, mm-hmm. and I fell in love. Like, it Aww. Was such a fun experience, just, you know, merely running around, like, grabbing dresses, zipping them up, hanging them on the hangers, just seeing how excited all the students were, like, when they found their dresses, and, like, you know, how happy the parents were, like, that their student was, you know, was finding something awesome for them. The feeling was, like, kind of I was obsessed. I was like, I have to do this again. I want to do this again. So I kept, you know, obviously kept coming back for, you know, several years. And then before COVID, I joined the board as a volunteer co-chair. And unfortunately, with COVID, we had to shut down operations for a bit. Around 2023, we're like, well, I think, you know, we were a little bit out of the woods. We're not, you know, 100%, but proms are happening again. You know, what can we do? Can we, like, restart? So a small group of us got together, decided like, okay, I think we could do this, and then run like a 6-week turnaround, which is, you know, a very tight, I must say.
You like in January decided we should do this, and oh gosh.
Oh yeah. Oh, like no. In the matter of weeks, like, yeah. Okay, like where do we go? Like, can we get our stuff out of storage? Like, what do we have to do? So we, about 8 of us scrapped it together, pulled it off. And then our past president was like, hey, I need to hand off the baton. Who wants to take over? And it was kind of, it was crickets, I have to say, you know, we're like, oh, you know, are we ready? And you know, I, along with my vice president, Maureen, I was like, well, I'll do it if you do it. And, you know, I stepped into the role.
I was going to ask if you were voluntold, but you were just you felt the need.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. We all wanted to continue on. And because we were, you know, we had
a president, it would just fall apart. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And we saw, you know, a great success and need in that 2023 year. Mm-hmm. I think 1,276 students came through, you know, and this is after a several year pause. So, yeah. And with this tight turnaround and like quick getting the word out there, we were able to organize ourselves and, you know, see that many students come through. So we were like, okay, there is still a need here in Central Ohio. Like, let's keep this going.
And I want our listeners to be aware that this is not your job. This is, I mean, this is a job, but it's, yeah. You're a volunteer.
Correct.
I mean, you are running this organization on a volunteer basis. So yep. Everything is volunteer and donation, right?
Yes.
So tell me how do you get money? You've volunteered or for donations? Yeah.
So we accept donations, you know, of all kinds, mm-hmm. you know, whether, you know, somebody has donates their time, donates a dress. We accept monetary donations, you know, through our website. We also hold tag sales throughout the spring and summer. What those do is, you know, they help earn money for operations for dresses and sizes and styles that we don't typically get, and helps us, you know, plug in any holes we get in our inventory. Tag sales are a lot of fun because we get a lot of donations from the community, and, you know, many of them are perfect for prom, they're perfect for the boutique floor, but many of them, you know, they're more homecoming forward, or maybe a little bit more vintage or mother of the bride style. So we take those and we, you know, put them up for sale for like $10, $20 at the most. And, you know, it's an easy fundraiser, and it's fun to like kind of like shop the racks and see, like, you know, if there's something, you know, you might need for an event. We also hold a fundraiser each year called Party for Prom. It's an adult prom themed fundraiser.
Oh, that's fun.
Dinner, drinks, dancing. We usually do silent auction, 50-50 raffle, and all those, every single dollar that we raise goes towards the Cinderella's Claws Boutique and keeping Fairy Good Mothers going.
And you just mainly want prom dresses, though. I mean, you don't do the pop-up for homecoming or anything. This is a prom situation.
Yeah, right? At this time, yeah, we aren't set up to do like homecoming pop up, which is why, you know, like the tag sales are perfect for those students, because we have a ton of shorter style dresses or more homecoming style. But our mission these days is prom.
Okay, and prom dresses mainly. Like, do you have any formal wear for men or for a girl who maybe wants to wear a suit? Like, do you have a variety like that?
We right now we do not do formal wear. You know, for males. So unfortunately, like, we don't have like that capacity to source that broadly.
Yeah,
And you know, the way the prom boutique is set up, you know, it's more for those like seeking dresses. But what we try to do is, you know, if we're able to get jumpsuits, if we're able to get like more like female cut outfits, mm-hmm. like whether it's like suiting or whatnot, we try to keep those on hand as well, because we do see a variety of students that they might not want to dress. They might want something a little bit different. We try to, you know,
dress it up with a fun jacket.
Absolutely. Yeah. Dress up with a fun jacket. You know, we don't want to dissuade anybody from coming to experience the boutique. Right now, the majority of items we have are dresses. But, you know, when we're able to support with like a fun jumpsuit or like, yeah, like a less dressy option, we try to do so.
Okay, so we're down to about a minute left. If someone's listening right now and they have a closet full of prom dresses, what do they do with them to help you out?
So I would right now I would sit tight. So we are going to be rolling out our community donation days at the shops at Worthington Place. They'll be once a month on Saturdays. I believe the next one we're thinking of doing, like, that's on the books, is the end of the month. So I believe it's May 30th.
Check the website. Check the website. Check that date. Yeah,
please check the website. We will be putting on our website soon. But we are happy to take any and all donations of that you may have.
And how many volunteers do you have, like, as a part of your organization?
We have right now, our board is made up of about 14 volunteers. Mm-hmm. With committees, you know, it puts us in the 20s, but volunteers for the boutique and beyond, we have, I would say, 200 core volunteers that we see every year. And this year we had, I think, 400 signed up that were brand new to volunteering with us.
Wow.
So, which is amazing.
Is there always room for more?
Always. We, you know, have a wide variety of roles, especially with the Cinderella's Closet Boutique, but we do have volunteer opportunities throughout the year.
We've been talking about prom season and making sure everyone has a dress with Katie Persecco, president of Fairy Godmothers. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
And you've been listening to Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
You know, every day on Up First, NPR's Golden Globe-nominated morning news podcast, we bring you three essential stories. At the heart of each story are questions. What really happened? What really mattered? What happens next? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious and to follow the facts. Follow Up First wherever you get your podcasts and start your day knowing what matters and why.